this is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop. Right on.
And welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Last go round, Calvin. Good morning to you. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well. Like you said, we made it to Christmas. How are you doing?
Well,
Christmas.
Not to
Christmas yet, but to the Christmas weekend.
This feels more like Easter, though, that we drive out.
It is almost balmy out.
Yeah, it really is. And if you don't know by now, that's my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, how you doing, man?
Well, pretty good. Like I said, it feels like Easter. It's coming up on Christmas.
It is really nice outside. I know when I left home this morning, it's warmer in Milwaukee than it is here. It was 44 degrees.
Well, the projections for climate change are that this part of Wisconsin turns into North Carolina, basically, climate-wise.
Well, if you believe in climate change.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, but anyway, listen, we're going to have Mayor Cavalier Johnson joining us at 9 o'clock. So kind of excited about the mayor of City of Milwaukee, largest city in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, you were hobnobbing with the mayor, the county exec, and the president of the United States yesterday.
Well, I don't know so much about hobnobbing, but certainly within the vicinity of the president. And, he's a small man, right? You know, he's not a really tall guy. Looking at him, Sandy, I would say he probably weighs 150 pounds.
Uh-huh.
I thought he was a bigger guy than that, but he's really a small guy.
I actually met him up close and personal at a couple of lunches.
Before he was president?
When 2008, when Obama and he were running, I was able to attend a couple of small lunches for people who had been sort of generous to him. And, he's not a big guy. He's had a lifetime in politics.
Yes.
And he's a, lifetime, he would call himself a public servant. And he likes people.
I can see that.
He's always been one of those kind of politicians.
Yeah. So, you and I on the same wavelength, I know, and I wanted to do, see if it was okay, if it's legal, for Sandy Williams and I to do a fireside chat,
people younger than us don't understand the fireside chat reference, which is what Franklin Delano Roosevelt used to do during his tenure during the Depression and then during World War II to sort of comfort America. He'd do a radio fireside chat talking about things.
Well, this is what Sandy and Earl are going to do today. You guys are welcome to call in at any point in the show, as always, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Sandy, as we come to the close of 2023.
It took me about 9 months to figure out how to write the right year on checks when you write a check. You know that transition where it's like,
yeah. Yeah. You mean you're still writing checks?
Well, not too often.
I know.
Most of them are electronic.
So let me, things as I was listening to President Biden, and again, I was within about 10 feet of him, and the things that he was talking about, really resonated with the audience that he was talking to, because he was talking to an audience that faces a tough future and a community that faces a tough future. And the middle class has kind of been out of reach for many of those people. And so every word that he said, they hung on it with, finally, there's somebody who realizes we're going through some tough times.
Well, you know, that's the interesting, what's happened to us is that we've developed this schizophrenic kind of a being, this our economy, our socioeconomic situation. Here we are in what, if you look at it on a macro basis, is the strongest economy we've ever had, lowest level of unemployment, everything about it that you measure, good GDP growth, kind of off the charts in terms of what we've had. But the question is everyone in the economy sharing in that? You know, we have real wages going up. But the problem with wages and the middle class wage is that the whole profile of the middle class family has changed. Number one, it's turned into two breadwinners rather than one. Both breadwinners are earning maybe half or, you know, however you divide it up. But, you know, we've talked about the median family in Wisconsin, but use round numbers. Go up. It's $65,000 about in Wisconsin, but let's use $70,000 as the median income because it's in the United States, it's closer to that. That $70,000 income after tax in today's world is just doesn't get the middle class family to the same place that $70,000 would get them under the old economy in 1975, when your job provided health care without any contribution on your part to the cost of health care, when your job provided the pension without any additional savings on your part to have the pension. When there was only one breadwinner earning that $70,000 because that was what a middle-class job got you, so that there was no need for child daycare, okay, and preschool education. It wasn't necessary. You take those three ingredients and now apply them into the middle-class family of today, and you end up finding out that anyone close to the median income is living paycheck to paycheck, can't save for their retirement, has trouble paying back their student debt, can't see a house. You know, if you're 30 years old and don't yet own a house, buying a house becomes a very difficult prospect for you. So what's happened is the middle class family's income might be going up, but the budget they face is so much more difficult for them to achieve that the standard of living, the quality of living is depreciated. And so some of those people, frustrated people, are jumping on board the anti-establishment candidate, Donald Trump, because he's angry and he's expressing their anger. Okay, they're angry and they don't see a solution. And quite frankly, we need to figure out how to solve the architecture of our economy so that the middle class family can thrive like they would if they were living in a European country that was providing them with all those things that are now in their budget and weren't in their budget in 1975.
So Sandy, the American dream, when was that coined? When was that? What?
Well, you know, it probably was a politician. I don't know if it was Coolidge or it was somebody.
So that long ago.
Yeah. The American dream has been, I think it was something that was sort of envisioned in the 20s.
Okay.
And home ownership was central to it. That the American dream was the middle class job.
It was the rule. It wasn't the exception.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we are now in a spot where the American dream is no longer the rule in our society. And so people, I was listening to Joe Biden and he was saying, well, you know, in the country, there's a higher percentage of African Americans employed than ever before. And he was right about that. But what the jobs that they're employed doing.
I was going to say, you know, economists, people who talk about the economy, like to just pretend that a job is a job is a job, okay? And that all jobs are worthwhile.
Equal, yeah,
equal. But the fact is that a job isn't necessarily a job, There are plenty of jobs in the economy that provide no future to anyone. And we were talking about it before the show, you know, all these contract employees driving an Uber. It might put cash on the table, but it doesn't give you Social Security. You know, you have to pay out of that. You have to pay your own FICA. You have to save for your own pension. You have to pay your own health care. You know, when you get all done doing that, it's not a job.
Right.
Okay. It's something that is sustenance and little more. And it might get you through. And, you know, if you're an Uber driver on top of your other job, okay, now maybe it can all make sense. But also, if you're working in a fast food restaurant, you're working 30 hours or 34 hours a week, and you're not getting benefits, and you're getting minimum wage or something close to minimum wage. That's not a job. That's just a job. Okay, that's a job that can go on the chart as this person is employed, but this person doesn't have a future, isn't going to participate in the American dream.
You know, Sandy, and you talked about, again, Uber and all those kinds of jobs, and those jobs are the ones that are exploding. Amazon and all those kinds. So there's a difference between UPS and Amazon. UPS hires their drivers.
Right.
Their drivers are employed by UPS, and so they receive a pension. They receive the benefits that you're talking about. Amazon does not. And so UPS is unionized. Amazon is not. And so certainly to Amazon, if I'm Amazon, that's the model I want to continue to follow because it gives me an opportunity for more profit, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the business model, that's the problem. You know, America's manufacturing and service industry jobs have built business models that are premised on what you can do, right? And if you're allowed to do it, they will do it to pursue optimal revenue because they say, well, people are making a choice. They're choosing to come and work for me. I'm not making them work for me, so I'm offering jobs. I'm offering jobs that are 30 hours a week at minimum wage. People are lining up to take the job. So it looks like win-win for the world, right? But if you work 34 hours a week for somebody, you're working essentially full-time. You're not going to get another job that's a material job, and yet you're working and you aren't getting a health care. You aren't getting a pension. You know, you're not making enough money to build a Social Security in the future that's going to be a full-born Social Security payment. So I'm just saying that what we need to address is the business models in the United States that have been premised on having a lot of people have a job, but it's a lowercase job, no capital J, all right? And what we need in the economy is many more capital J jobs.
All right, so 844-967-2789 is the number. We'd love for you to join in the conversation. We're going to spend the entire show talking about these things. It's critically important, so you can join in with us. Don't touch that dial. Show. You know, Fireside Chat with Sandy Williams and Earl Ingram, and we're going to spend, you know, the entirety of this show with Sandy and I today having a conversation about where our nation is at and where the American people are and how we fix it. We really are at a crossroads, and, you know, We've got to make sure people are aware of that. So, Sandy, before we went to break, I was you know, you're talking about where we are now and these jobs that don't offer those things. I was a guy who benefited from all of those things before that you're talking about. A guy who, you know, who basically right out of high school did not go and get additional education and all of those things because I was able to do like millions and millions of and tens of millions of people at that time who could just, there were opportunities in the way the government and business was set up. You know, it was in mindful of all Americans and not just a handful. But so I want to make sure that people are aware of, and especially people who maybe didn't live through your and my time, just how this nation was set up. My dad, who was able to, you know, not graduate from high school, but he was able to live a middle-class lifestyle even back then.
Well, you understand. I mean, the window started in the 1920s, Henry Ford, mass assembly line kind of processes that created jobs, that created a middle class with wages and with the United States being essentially an island unto itself, with the competition in the automobile industry was only Ford, General Motors, right, and Chrysler.
All internal.
Yeah, it was all internal. And so they didn't face the world competition, and they became comfortable with job structures that were more or less equalized across the various unionized sectors of the economy. And what it created was an environment in which when you got a job, healthcare came, you know, was a benefit that you didn't pay for.
Right.
Your employer paid for it. You received cash, and out of the cash salary that you earned, you did not have to pay for healthcare or contribute to it. You did not have to contribute to a pension. It was funded for you. And so that was an entirely different environment. And also the compensation levels of the job put you in the middle class with one worker.
Yes.
And that has all changed now. So if you look at the median family, which means that 50% of the families are at or below the income of that median family, it's two wage workers, it's two wage earners. What they're earning is enough to not even qualify quite for full class, middle class status. And the middle class status doesn't provide them with benefits. They have to pay for it themselves. They have to pay for health care, and they have to pay for their own retirement funded. And even in the jobs in which you're employed in a large corporation, they've shifted costs to the employees. So now if you're working in a large company, you still have to pay for probably half of your health care and a deductible that's associated with your health care. And you have a 401k that you fund yourself. You might have contributions from your employer, but you're now being asked to fund your retirement out of your income as well. So the income you get is not the same as the income that was received in 1970, because out of the income you get, you are now bearing costs that used to be borne by your employer. And so these comparisons on the middle class, or looking at the fact that we are earning more today than we were yesterday, needs to look at the budget as well. It's sort of like the United States government looking at its deficit and not looking at its revenue. In the middle class family, we shouldn't look at the revenue. We have to look at the budget.
You know, Sandy, the other part of it that we haven't talked about was stability. You had a job for life.
Mm-hmm.
At least your working life. Yeah. And back in those days, I mean, I had one job from 18 to 34. That was the 54. That was common. It was commonplace. Stability existed. So fears that middle-class families had weren't the fears that they're dealing with now.
Right.
Because you can lose your job in the twinkling of an eye. Some corporation decides, well, you know, we've had enough. Let's go do something different. Let's move to a different place where we can, you know, don't have all the burdens of all of those things you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, with job stability and with your benefits taken care of, it was pretty easy to have a family budget that you could live within. You bought a house you could afford. You had a car you could afford.
Right.
You weren't living in fear of paycheck to paycheck. You knew the next paycheck was coming, and so you had you didn't have financial stress 100% of the time. And today's families, many of them have financial stress 100% of the time, and it's what's causing the turmoil in our economy. It's what's causing the turmoil in our politics, is the fact that the architecture of our economy has changed and has put a great deal of stress on middle America. And if I were a business person today, I'd be waking up and looking at that and saying, we've got to fix this because we need a successful middle class that's thriving. And we need one that does not live in social fear of their situation so that they're too reactive to be positive participants in the economy. Right now we have people, and the desperation that they're feeling is translating to anger. And, you know, it's part of the populist movement that Donald Trump is riding.
844-967-2789.
But incidentally, Donald Trump doesn't promise to solve the problem. He only wants to use the anger and frustration. And, you know, the Republican Party has never been a party that's talked about solving these problems, okay? The problem of the middle class budget, which is trying to provide for them for health care that they can afford and have access to child daycare that is available to them and is there, and retirements that are adequate.
All right, 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams and Earl Ingram in a fireside chat. Be right back. At 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. That's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And we're having a conversation this morning about just where we are in this nation. And we're talking about the citizenry and if it can be, you know, repaired. Because it is, we've allowed this to go on now, Sandy, for a couple decades.
Well, you know, like I said, one of the problems is that this problem has come on us much like boiling water comes on a frog. When you put the frog in a cold tub of water and put it on the stove, and the water gets warmer and warmer, and the frog's doing all right for a while. It doesn't notice it until it's too late.
Right.
And I'm afraid what we've got in our economy is the same thing. The architecture of our economy, what it meant to be employed, and what came with the job, has changed slowly from that cold water to something much more like boiling water today. So that, you know, like you were saying, when you had your job, you had health care without any contribution on your part, a pension without any contribution on your part, didn't need child daycare because your income was middle income,
right,
level, and your wife didn't need to work. And so today's different. And the budget faced by the middle income family is entirely different. And the problem is that when you look at the political process, the Republicans basically want to promise people smaller government and tax reductions Smaller government and tax reductions are not going to fix the architecture problem that the middle class family has. You could reduce the income tax for a middle class family by 10%, and it's a small number,
right.
$5,000. Child daycare for an average family costs $16,000.
It costs as much as their mortgage.
Healthcare costs are $16,000 minimum for a bronze care before you get a dollar of coverage. All of these things are so much more expensive that the notion that is handed out, that is held out by the Republicans of reducing taxes is not going to be a benefit to the middle-class family, because the problems the middle-class family has to do with the benefits that they are currently now paying for themselves that were not being paid for in the past, and which put them in a terrible spot, okay? And so if we had the same political governmental architecture as, say, Germany, these people in Germany would be doing just fine, because they would have daycare, they would have health care, they would have a pension that would be adequate, and they would have education after high school that was essentially free, okay? So that the same level of income to that worker in Germany is a much different outcome for that worker.
So what do you say to the business community that says we can no longer afford that?
Well, they can't afford the current situation is what they can't afford. And I'm sure a businessman like Jamie Dimon would look at this and say, you know what, we have to solve the architecture of the economy, because the plight of that middle class creates a middle class that is not thriving. And our economy is premised on a thriving and growing middle class, not
with purchasing power,
not a shrinking middle class.
Right.
We're a consumption economy. We need purchasing power. We can't rely on the top 10% of the people in this country to buy everything. You know, we have to sell hundreds of millions of things, not just 30 million things to the top 10%. And so, the business people need to wake up. And they've been building a business model based on a myopic view of their own situation and their own bottom line, without understanding how it contributes to the social problem that exists, the socioeconomic problem that exists when everyone else adopts the same business model.
So,
and so now we get, now this frog is in boiling water.
So let me ask you, Sandy, because there are people who will say, well, you know, it was okay before the Democrats got in power. This is not about recently Republican or Democrats being in power. It's bigger than that. Is it safe to say that?
No, absolutely. I mean, this problem of prosperity not being experienced by the middle class is the result of decades of change in the architecture of our economy, and it's not the result of taxes. It's not even the result of the burst of inflation we had the last couple of years. It's just that when you are living paycheck to paycheck, inflation bites you much harder than it bites somebody else. But those people who are living paycheck to paycheck and getting pinched by inflation were living paycheck to paycheck before inflation came along. It's just that inflation was a harder pill for them to swallow because they were living paycheck to paycheck. And so what we need to understand, and what the people who are living paycheck to paycheck need to understand, is we need to set up a process, an architecture for our economy that solves the problem.
We meaning the government.
We meaning the government. And we need to address it politically. And we need the people in government to understand that they need to be addressing this problem of the middle class family. They can't just ride on the notion that the aggregate data suggests that we have a vibrant economy, okay? I mean, Joe Biden is properly going to claim that the economy today, from all indexes, from all the indices, is very strong, and it is. He also talks about and recognizes the plight of people within the economy who are not thriving. And I think the people who are not thriving in this economy, who actually are a very large number of people, need to wake up and start voting their interest politically. And they need to stop just addressing the anger and frustration they have, because voting for a Republican who's promising to cut your taxes and cut government is not in any way going to solve your problem.
All right. CJ, good morning to you, CJ. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call and letting me talk for a few seconds. But, you know, as I listen to Sandy try to convince us everything's okay, and...
Wait. Where does Sandy say everything's okay, man? Are you hearing something different than I am? I'm here with Sandy, and I'm listening to our conversation. Where did he say things were okay?
He's putting guardrails up that this has been going on for so long.
It has.
Okay, CJ. Let's talk. Now, you want to call and have a discourse rather than let's talk about how we got the architecture of the economy. When did employers start withdrawing from providing health care benefits to their workers? When did that happen?
Going to fall into this trap of yours.
No, this isn't a trap. This is what we're talking about. Thank you very much for the call.
You know, so we're going to just ignore the fact that we had that call.
Well, no, yeah, I just think that people who don't want to address the facts, which is, you know, the facts in our economy and the evolution of our economy, and want to point and try and create a partisan divide about it, are just ignoring the facts. And so it's interesting, CJ would call that a trap, to talk about the facts. Putting up guardrails, guardrails are about what? I mean, we're talking now about how we evolve to the situation where the middle class family feels this pinch paycheck to paycheck, and they've experienced it for a decade.
Well, but
or more.
Sandy, he doesn't understand the depth of the conversation that we're having. And I would say that people who are caught up in this don't give a rip about whether somebody's a Democrat or a Republican. They want to be able to live a comfortable lifestyle in the wealthiest nation on earth. They saw their parents live that way. They saw their grandparents live that way, unencumbered by all of the concerns about making it from day to day. And they had probably thought they would live their lives that way as well. And it's not going to happen. And it's not going to happen if Donald Trump becomes the president again, because it's bigger than any individual. As you and I have been talking about, it's a mindset of business in this nation over decades that has brought this to bear. Is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah, you know, it's like I said, it's been a process of the heat going up on the boiling water. So In the early 90s, it became apparent that the number of workers was not going up as rapidly as the number of retirees were going to go up. And the projections for pension funds revealed that fixed benefit pension funds were going to become very difficult to sustain financially, that the contributions to those pension funds was going to become so enormous that the businesses decided they had to work very hard to negotiate away from those fixed benefit plans. So they began to have, the 401k came out of that process, and the 401k became the norm for retirement plans, which means that the employee starts funding their own plan. Maybe the employer contributes as well, but it's a finite number, so that's the way it started. And then the healthcare thing, there began to be a realization. It started probably in the fast food industry, that it was possible to avoid paying health care benefits or other benefits to your employees by making sure that they were part-time. And so the business model for many businesses, particularly in the service sector, became part-time employees, not full-time employees. Therefore, the ability to avoid the need to provide health care benefits, et cetera. And so the part-time employee is someone who's going to pay for everything on their own out of a fairly paltry income. You know, you can say that $15 an hour is fine. Well, $15 an hour isn't fine if you have to pay for your own health care benefits, you have to pay your own FICA, et cetera.
You know, even if you didn't have to pay those things, $15 an hour could probably get you a room comfortably.
Right.
To live in.
Yeah, I mean, $15 an hour. I mean, one of the problems is that the minimum wage concept as it started was sort of, I think, thought by everyone as being the kind of wage you pay to people who work for the summer while they're going to school. Okay, that's part-time. Or someone who's working part-time on top of their other job. But part-time became a full-time job for many people who were working 34 hours a week, earning an hourly wage, earning something close to minimum wage, which is not a livable wage.
Let me ask you, Sandy. So we do know that this decision by business to abdicate those things that they did, you know, I was still working when the 401k came into vogue. I never will forget when they brought it in. I was so far down the road towards my pension that I didn't have to worry about the 401k. It was an addition to our pensions. And so we had an opportunity to put money in a 401k in addition to our pensions that we had already earned when 401k came into existence or came into vogue. And so, but those who came after us didn't have pensions. At the time, I didn't realize the difference. I couldn't see that far ahead of the game. But as a guy who eventually wound up getting a pension and being the last of the employees, my generation that received pensions, finally getting that 401k and realizing you could never put in enough money, even though I was putting in the maximum, it would have never benefited me to the degree that my pension has been able to benefit me.
Right. I mean, the problem is, for instance, some press last week, I think the Wall Street Journal provided the information that I won't have the percentages exactly.
So,
right.
Sandy, so hold the thought, because we have to take a short hiatus. Susan, hang on. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Blazing bright by your side, blazing bright, caroling through the night. And this Christmas will be a very special Christmas for me. Loving each other just makes the season bright. HackDiamonds.com. The Shaw
Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams, my co-host, is with me as always on Friday. Let's go to the phone lines. And Susan from Kenosha, good morning to you, Susan. How are you doing? What do you think of the discussion?
Well, I've been taking care of kids, so I can barely talk. But I have to say that you and Sandy are absolutely right. When I started working for the Milwaukee Police Department in 1994. The city of Milwaukee paid completely for our health care and paid completely for our pension. It wasn't until 2006, and I was a member of the union board at that time, that things began to change. And they were changing because of Walker and his right to work program. By the time that I retired in 2016, not only were we paying for our health insurance, we were also paying for our pension. And I have to tell everybody that when the city was paying for our health care, we got our health care for free. And we went to the doctor for free. We didn't pay anything. The only thing we paid was a minor amount for our medication if we needed it. And that's how it was.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Last week or a couple of weeks ago, there was a political analysis of a savings. There have been someone who had reported that Wisconsin had saved, and I won't have the number right. It was like $2 billion as the result of the Act 10 and then the analysis of it was, well, it's true. Government has saved about that amount of money, but all of that amount of money has been shifted to the workers. Okay, so that the money that's saved is not saved in terms of it. What it's been is it's been transferred. The burden of that has been transferred to the workers, so that the salaries they earn now are essentially worth $2 billion less to them as the result of this transfer.
Hey, Susan, I wish I had more time. Thank you very much for the call. Merry Christmas to you. Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Good morning to you, Gary. You say what? Quickly.
Yeah, hi, guys. I just got in my truck just now. I just heard the tail end of CJ. But the thing is, I worked for a company for 35 years before I started my own business. And I negotiated with them, and they paid all of my health cares. Other people had to pay 50-50. Me, I just negotiated with them to pay everything.
Gary, you know, when I worked for a company, and I didn't have individual autonomy to negotiate with the company. Employees, the negotiations were done through unions.
Well, I mean, you know, Gary's point is that, you know, in certain circumstances, I think what he's doing actually, I think what you're doing is actually
making the point,
yes. Which is if you have to pay for your own health care and you have to pay for your own retirement, it comes out of the salary check that you get every other week. And so that salary check the face value of that salary check isn't worth as much to you because you've got these burdens that are now after your paycheck instead of before your paycheck. And that's really been the problem for lots of America, you know, is that this shift to putting all these benefits after the paycheck is received instead of before the paycheck is received has changed the socioeconomic condition of middle-class America.
Gary?
Yeah, okay. I got to go back to work. But I do want to say one thing. A conversation is a conversation between two or three people. You don't give CJ enough time,
Gary,
to talk.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Good morning to you, Cindy. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. Well, the Republicans are out to eliminate pensions, eliminate unions, eliminate Social Security. They don't want people to get health care benefits. But yet they really expect, and they don't want to pay a living wage either for that matter, but yet they expect everyone to be retiring comfortably down the road. I don't understand how they square this, because if you don't have enough money to cover all your expenses every month, how in God's name do you save anything for retirement?
Sandy, that's the point you've been making, right?
Right. And the problem is the future. For it's not just the current situation, the ability to have the American dream, to save enough to have a down payment to buy a house so you can accumulate some intergenerational wealth. But the problem is also the future, which is retirement. And, you know, the Social Security problem that the nation faces is nothing compared to the retirement issue that many of the people who are currently 20 and 30 face, okay? Because for a large portion of America, Social Security is not sufficient to sustain the lifestyle that they have lived, okay? And so, you know, the ability to save enough to have a retirement that is one that is essentially reflective of the life you've lived requires quite a large sum of money to be put into savings.
Cindy?
Merry Christmas to both of you.
Likewise. Thank you as well. 844-967-2789 is the number. You know, it's Fridays. It means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll continue the conversation on the other side.
When the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel.
not